Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast, the show where we bring you the best clips from our Red Men Plus content over the previous week. I say it every week, but if you want to check out these shows in full, either in video or podcast format, redmenplus.com is the best place to go. If you sign up today using the promo code KLOP, when you join as a monthly captain subscriber, you'll get your first month for free. So go and check it all out. If you don't like it, you can just cancel. You won't be charged anything. And if you do like it and want to continue as a subscriber and support everything we do at Redmen HQ, that would be much appreciated as well. So yeah, let's get on with the show. We'll start with the Biased Football Podcast. It was Chris, Dan and Chloe in. Yeah, Liverpool's rivals had somewhat of a mixed weekend, and there's been some transfer news as well. So yeah, Chris and the guys jumped into all of that on this week's Biased Football Podcast.
On to Spurs then. Unfortunately for every Premier League side that isn't Spurs, Hugo Lloris has gone to LAFC. And Timo Werner looks likely to move to North London. Eric Dier's wanted by Bayern Munich, which is interesting. But, well, let's do a little bit more on Timo Werner then. Because if it does feel to me, like we mentioned it before, I feel like he would work there. Yeah. I feel like he's got a manager who's going to support him as well.
Yeah, it feels like a good signing for them, to be honest. And we know that players can be reborn. Mo Salah didn't do it for Chelsea, yeah, but he certainly has done it for us. Yeah. So you can get this. And he was a great player for Leipzig before he left to go to Chelsea in the first place. And it feels like he needs a manager like Jurgen Klopp, who's going to, you know, put him under his wing and support him and hold him and make sure, you know, he gets massive hugs after the game if he does well. Like that just feels what Timo Werner needs. And he's going to be in an exciting team. And there's not going to be as much pressure on them, because right now Spurs fans, and rightfully so, they're just really happy with where their future and what this project is looking like. And right now, not all the results need to happen straight away. So if Timo Werner comes over on his loan and does really well, then he could be their number one, you know, striker for them. We've seen Richarlison's actually starting to kick into gear a little bit, which can take the pressure off him. And also when Son comes back, he helps out with the goals. They've got Kulusevski as well. So for me, I think he just fits Spurs. I think he does. I think he'll get quite a few goals. I think he'll be more clinical because he'll be more free. There won't be the weight of Chelsea and you having to be hitting the ground straight away. There's so much pressure on you. It's not like that there. So and with how exciting their football is, I think he really fits the system.
No, I agree. And that Chelsea number 9 thing, just to finish on that final point, has become a bit of a curse, hasn't it, ever since Drogba. They've been not been able to fill that void, essentially. Nobody's worn that shirt with any great distinction. But just while he was talking, Romano tweeted about Timo Werner. And there's an option to buy on the loan deal for €17 million.
17 million euros.
Wait, 17?
17.
Wow.
That's a steal.
I'd be in there for that.
No, I'd be in there for that.
That's a real... Because he's a player, we've said it, I think he suits the way Tottenham want to play their football. Exciting, fast brand of football. I think he's obviously not a Son Heung-min, but he's not a million miles away in terms of the way he goes about his business. But he could play across the front line, I think, yeah, it's fair to say. Yeah. So that's another thing. So yeah, it feels like a very smart piece of business from Spurs.
Million, ridiculous. How much did Chelsea pay for him?
It was around 60 off top of my head, I think, something that like that. Much, yeah, I'm sure it was. It was a good chunk anyway.
I thought it was more. I thought it was like 70, but really? Yeah, it probably was around 60.
17 million seems ridiculous.
It's worth having a go, isn't it? It's spinning the wheel.
Yeah, his career's obviously fell off a long way since we're talking about Liverpool linked him and stuff like that. But still, for 17 million, he's probably got 25, 26, I'd imagine, something like that.
27 years old.
Oh, is he? Okay, good. 20, deal.
Funnily enough, his birthday's in March as well, so he'll be 28 in March, same as Ivan Toney.
Oh, there we go.
Up before.
Yeah, 17 mil is sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Eric Dier, is this Kane's influence at Bayern Munich, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got a bloody good agent getting him that move to Bayern, having not kicked the ball in anger for Spurs basically all season. Yeah, no, you know what? It's one of them, isn't it? Like, Eric Dier on his day, which has not been for a few years now, if I'm going to be dead honest, was a pretty solid footballer. Obviously, he was the defensive midfielder.
And he's versatile as well.
But yeah, he was defensive midfielder, wasn't he? Sort of converted into a centre-half. Was it Sporting previously? That's where he came from originally, I think. Yeah. Solid.
What's their stadium called?
Eat and Speak.
Oh, they're not the stadium light, are they? That's the other one in Portugal. Oh, yeah, that's good. Benfica, that is stadium light. Anyway, yeah, good. Good signing, I think, for Bayern, to be honest with you. They're looking for a centre-back. They seem to be desperate for a centre-back. I think
you just said good signing for Bayern.
Yeah, I think he will be, yeah, because only so much as the Bundesliga. Only in the Bundesliga ranks, not necessarily in Champions League footy and stuff like that. I think it might get caught out in the latter stages of Champions League, but I think in terms of the Bundesliga, I think it'd do a good job there. I do.
Do you, Chloe?
I'd rather just have an invisible person at centre-half, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, that's not fair.
I don't care. He's not Bayern Munich level.
But what is that? Because they had Choupo-Moting for a while. He played for Stoke, so I'm not sure. Yeah, where
he's scored goals in the semi-finals of the Champions League.
Yeah,
he is not.
Different.
I'm sorry, he is not. Choupo-Moting is not it. He is not the guy.
No, we don't believe.
Eric
that,
Dier's
but we
a better
don't believe Eric Dier's a good enough football player to be playing for Bayern Munich
in the Bundesliga.
No, they've got Kim Min-jae. Who's the other lad?
Upa
Meccano.
Yeah.
They've got. What do they need? Delict. What do they need? Eric Dier for
injury issues all across them. Plays DM, plays centre-back. I think he's a smart piece of business.
To never kick a football, yeah, he's a smart piece of business. Yeah. To sit on the bench, he's a smart piece of business. Maybe if you need him in that DFK Cup, sure. To play in a Champions League, no. No. He's not, no.
This is Eric Dier with Champions League winners medal around his neck. Come April, May, rather.
And if he is, he'll have sat on the bench for all 8 games and came on for 5 minutes at some point.
Okay. We're going to move on then. Before we do, I think it's worth sort of taking stock of Arsenal, United, City, Villa, Newcastle and Spurs. There's not a lot of transfers that are rumoured to be done. Why do you think that is? Because if you throw Liverpool into that as well, like, it does feel like there's not going to be much movement in this January transfer window. And I know it will probably more than likely happen now in terms of going into the winter break and stuff like that, but also, if you're looking to sign someone and you're desperate to sign someone, January 1st is the time when you sign them so that you can use them for more games, especially at the back end of this Christmas period and stuff. Are we, putting me Liverpool fan hat on here, are we like, okay, actually looking around, it's like, oh God, we need signings, we need signings, we need signings. And no one else is making signings and we're top of the table. Are we all right here?
There's definitely an element of that, yeah. I think from a Liverpool angle, I think we're sort of taking stock of our situation a little bit. Obviously, we've seen quite a few lads come back from loan and stuff like that. I think we're just trying to work out where pieces fit, and the Nat Phillips situation's a really interesting one. So what happens there might sort of lend itself to what we do next, potentially, in terms of the market. I think injuries are
definitely... Well, let's go through the Nat Phillips one then, because, you know, if anybody doesn't know who's watching, if he plays for Liverpool...
He can't go anywhere else.
He can't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
He can't play for 3 clubs in one season, can you?
And the same essentially applies for Owen Beck as well, unless he went back to Dundee. Now, Nat Phillips is not going to go back to Celtic. They have no interest in that deal, so...
Dundee would probably have an interest in Owen Beck,
though. Yeah, they'd
bite
your hand
off. Judging by their social media accounts.
Yeah, they'd absolutely snap your hand off for him back. So, yeah, that's. I think Liverpool are just a bit of a staging one, anyway. I think we're probably looking at our own situation, our rivals a little bit, and could be a domino effect if we lose someone through injury, potentially, touch wood, that isn't the case, or if one of our rivals acts, then maybe we'll be forced into the market. But also, Liverpool have done this for a few Januaries now, whereby we're quite content until we're not, and the minute we're not is when one
we're
of our
so
rivals...
opportunistic, aren't we?
They move for, say, Inacio, let's use him as an example in this. We clearly like Inacio. That's sort of common, uncommon secret. Everyone knows that. If Arsenal suddenly advance their interest in Gonzalo Inacio and say, we'll pay you 50 million now, would it shock me if Liverpool went? No, not whatsoever. Liverpool will do the same thing because I think we like the player.
Yeah, ultimately that's it, isn't it? Are you surprised at how little movement's happened so far, Cole?
I guess so, just because it always feels like transfer windows every opponent that, you know, is your rival or is challenging you, keep signing players and you don't, and that's just how it feels. But I also don't think there's loads of options anymore. Like, I just don't. And the options that are there, look, we can talk about centre-halves. You mentioned Inacio. There's Hincapie there. And if you're trying to get him from Bayer Leverkusen, good luck, because they're top of the table. Xabi Alonso's turned them into an absolute monster.
Are they still unbeaten?
I don't think
they've lost a game at all. No, they
were the only side in Europe's top five leagues that were still unbeaten.
Yeah, they still are, I think I saw a stat this weekend. And this is the thing, if you now want him, who was an idea or something, you know, 6 months ago, well, he's now going to cost you double of what he was then, because there's no way Bayer Leverkusen are going to let him go.
It's like giving away a title.
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually not played that much, which is mad.
Because injury is...
No, we're not even that. He's just not been a regular for them, which is really crazy. Like, but they are solid. They're a good side, to be honest with you. Yeah, but I agree. I think ultimately, I don't know who is out there. There doesn't seem to be a perfect option. The only one, again, come back to it, Inacio, because of the release clause. Because everyone always says, who are you going to get out of the club? If there's a release clause there, there's your answer.
Yeah, especially with our man in charge of signings. You know, we know he can work a release clause. The big name that looks like he could be moving to the Premier League, of course, though, Chloe, is Jordan Henderson.
You had me sold on a dream there. I was like, oh my God, who is it? Yeah, okay.
Kylian Mbappe, did you think, for a second?
No, I just thought it was someone top tier, not Jordan Henderson.
Well, Klopp said in his quotes there, let me have a little look here, he didn't call me. This was speaking after his side knocked Arsenal out of the FA Cup. He laughed off the suggestion that Liverpool could be a potential destination for Jordan Henderson, said he didn't call me. We spoke, actually, but not about that. So really, I have nothing to say about that. Pretty strong to assume that Jordan won't be playing his trade at Anfield again with Liverpool.
And obviously, you know, the reason he wanted to go Saudi, another big reason, was because he didn't want to play for anyone that Liverpool could come up against. I'm pretty sure, you know, in that interview, it was his heartstrings. You know, he tried to really get us on board with that idea that I couldn't possibly play against Liverpool in any competition in any way. So if I just move to Saudi, the best option is either in that World Cup thing, which he's never going to get to under Steven Gerrard at El Etifak. But also, it's like pre-season friendly, is it, anyway? And that's a lovely little time. If Liverpool played them, you could go back. So, yeah, it's really interesting to see where he'll end up, because, you know, he can't go to anyone in Europe who could possibly play in, against Liverpool, because...
Sunderland?
That would go against his... Yeah. Yeah, go
does
on.
Does he get in the England side? No. If he goes to Sunderland? Doesn't
he? Yeah,
Southgate,
isn't it?
Southgate.
Championship's better than Saudi Pro League.
Yeah, he wouldn't have a...
True.
He'd just choose them every single time. So, but yeah, you know, cry me a river, Jordan Henderson.
I think every bottom half of the table Premier League side will take Jordan Henderson.
Oh, they should.
Brentford and maybe a Brighton, Brentford and West Ham in the top. But the only ones who wouldn't are Everton because of his Liverpool connections. But if he'd have had the same career he had at Liverpool with Manchester United, he'd be there already over Jordan Henderson.
It'll be interesting to see what he actually does, because
would anyone in the top half of the table, Dan, take him?
Yeah, I think West Ham. And Brighton. I can see a midfield three of Adam Lallana, Jordan Henderson and James Milner.
If you were Unai Emery, would you think about Jordan Henderson?
Yeah, I would. That little bit of nous, that little bit of experience to get him over the line in the race for top four, to no-brainer.
If you were Eddie Howe, would you think about Jordan Henderson?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but the Sunderland thing probably puts pay to that. But yeah, I would, honestly. I would.
He's going to find a club. I think he's going to find a club no problem whatsoever. Well,
having read the article from The Athletic earlier on, Oliver Kays, desperate to get out of Saudi. Like, at first I just thought it's just reports and reports, but he's desperate to get
out
of Saudi.
Like, the project looks like it's going great. Like,
obviously doesn't like... It's not Saudi that's the problem. He lives in Bahrain, remember?
Yeah.
Maybe it's Bahrain that's the issue.
Yeah. Who knows? But I just remember seeing a tweet earlier saying he's offered himself to such and such and such and such, and someone just replied saying, I've offered myself to Dua Lipa. Things, you know.
Well, Jesse Lingard offered himself to Barcelona, apparently.
That was
recently.
Another one.
If Barcelona were watching, by the way, I'm also available.
Yeah. 8 out of 10 centre midfielder there for
them. Exactly.
And Liverpool news, we may as well just discuss it briefly before we go. It looks like Hull will be signing Carvalho, Chloe.
Bit of a mad one for me. He's the club, like, obviously Southampton were interested. Who was the Premier League side that was interested?
Wolves wanted him.
Wolves, that was it.
Leicester and Southampton were interested
Leicester,
as well.
Leicester, yeah. So I kind of thought Hull was maybe the last club on the list, but evidently he's going there. Clearly he needs a slow move. We don't feel like he could be put in our squad at any point, even if we are fighting on four fronts. There's clearly some thought that no, he needs to go out and get this experience, mature as a player, mature as a person. So let's hope it goes well for him. Let's hope he returns as a good footballer, because I've got no idea what's going on with Fabio Carvalho. He's fell off a cliff.
Does the 2-3 clubs thing mean, is it worldwide?
Yeah, he's as well. Doing so, it's like a FIFA thing.
So he can't play for us either.
No,
if we want him to move on and stuff like that.
That's why it's probably going to happen this week. By the looks of it, because there's no point in him sticking around anymore. Yeah. Like this Fulham game on the horizon. If he plays in that, he's got a stables now for the foreseeable for the rest of the season. So it doesn't make any sense.
Still feels like something's gone on there.
It's an odd one. It was the Man City game, wasn't it? It was the Carabao Cup Man City game where he scored away from home, got took off at half time. I don't think we've seen him again ever since. And Klopp.
Is that literally his last appearance?
I'm 99% certain that's the case. Yeah, Klopp. Spoke because he played in the derby as well, him and Harvey Elliott both started
because
the derby.
He'd done unbelievable against Newcastle when he came on and scored.
The win,
he then Harvey Elliott and him started in the midfield three,
which felt lightweight
against Everton.
Yeah, it's one of those. I like him, and there's clearly a talent in there. There's no question about that. You know, the other side of things, who knows? But it's some fall from grace, and that's no disrespect to Hull. But to go from being sought after and chased by Liverpool for 6 months before signing him to having an okay start to Liverpool career to then falling and then to go into Leipzig, which is a big old move, and one of the Bundesliga powerhouses, to Hull, it's a bit, what's going on, mate? Like, where are we going? Ultimately, from what I've read, the Tyler Morton factor is a factor when it comes to going to Hull, so that's a nice thing. I like that. The manager, I think it's Liam Messina, has also spoken to him, and that's a positive. And the biggest positive out of all of them is, from what I can read, is that he just wants to play footy. Mm. He's looked at the Southampton thing and the Leicester thing and the Wolves thing and gone, yeah, I'll get minutes, but will I be the guy? Maybe not. Whereas at Hull, he's going to be the guy. Like, he could spearhead
when them. You are questioning someone's mentality and how they are behind the scenes, that's actually a big
huge
tick in the right column.
Yeah.
Because if he'd have gone to Leicester are absolutely pissing the championship. Like, they are up already, essentially, all bar the shouting. Like, he could have gone there and just played a part and had a jolly old time, a good few months, shipped in with a goal and assist here and there, and great. But would he have got the minutes he needed? Potentially not. So this actually is quite, it's quite a positive move from his respect.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll quickly do bell ends of the week then. Dan, we'll start with you, mate.
I have completely forgot.
Martin Odegaard.
Martin Odegaard for G'ing up the Liverpool end.
For this. Let's see. Can you see Martin Odegaard on my laptop?
It's not working.
It's not working.
It's what?
Not working.
I don't know what he said. He said something, it wasn't working.
That is so sad.
That is sad.
Okay, we'll get there. Have you got it now?
Here we go.
Yes, okay. So Martin Odegaard here. Let's have a look at him. The absolute balance. And talk me through it, Dan.
So basically what he's doing there is he's giving it the big arms and saying, come on, let's get some more out of you. Come on, let's go. Come on, big noise. However, it turns out he's doing that to Liverpool fans who travel to the Emirates.
So what you're telling me, Dan, here is this is the Liverpool end with all the Liverpool flags.
That's right, yeah. That end there that he's doing that to, that's the Liverpool end.
Yeah.
So that's the wrong end for him to be doing that to. Boy, you're a Liverpool fan. Actually, do you remember when he trained with us a few years ago?
Yeah.
Good player, by the way.
Yeah,
he's maybe all he just got mixed up side. In his head.
Yeah, he is a bell end, but he's also really good.
That is absolutely classic. Chloe?
I went with Jordan Henderson.
Why?
Not because Joe had already done the graphic. No, I went with Jordan Henderson because, you know, it felt like he forced the move, he pushed for the move, and he made so many lies up about why he was actually going there. And it turns out, you know, it was for money, and he's absolutely hating it over there. So now he wants to claw back and come somewhere in, you know, he really wants to go to the Premier League. But once again, he told us all as Liverpool fans that he couldn't possibly play against us because that would just be too hard for him, which was why he was going to Saudi. It wasn't money. He was really excited about the prospect and the idea of changing football over there and playing in front of 600 fans. And it just goes to show that he was just a load of shit.
I think it's hilarious, but I've got to be honest, I think it takes a big man to admit your mistake.
Mm.
And to come back, whether he says it or not, he has.
Do you think he'd have to apologise, though?
I don't know. But coming back admits a mistake to the entire world.
Leaving to go anywhere admits a mistake, not just to come back to the firm.
Yeah.
Because if the likes of Sunderland or someone, there's no way you take a wage cut to go to Sunderland if you were really that happy. Like, you just wouldn't. So it's actually to go anywhere and take a wage cut, that goes to show you've made the mistake.
I do feel a bit sorry for him, to be honest with you. I do, because I think he's had some bad advice. And I think weirdly, I read that Oliver Kay article. And it was not what was said. Some of it was what wasn't said for me. So, like, it almost references Adam Lallana and James Milner going to Brighton, and it frames it in a way that he thought that was a terrible decision. And I'm thinking, how have you managed to think that two of your best mates have made this absolutely horrendous decision, and yet you've come to this other decision, which is go to Saudi Arabia for loads of money and throw everything out that you've worked so hard for over the course of the last 15 years of your career? It really does say to me that it's bad advice. It's not just him, and he's got to have a fault in it, and he'll have a big fault in it, but I feel it's more than just him.
Yeah,
I just can't see how you would make such a fucking ginormous mistake like that.
I must admit, that was my overriding feeling all throughout the saga, essentially, in the summer, because he came across as such a well-educated, well-thought-out man who wouldn't make such horrendous decisions, quite frankly. But listen, whether it is him or whether he has been poorly advised, whatever it is, ultimately it boils down to he had the final say, and he got it massively wrong.
And he's lied ever since then for his reasoning.
Well, he's just tried to save face, hasn't he? But his reputation damage is done now.
It's done, absolutely done. And my bell end of the week is Sunderland Football Club, because they were going into the FA Cup again, it's Newcastle in a derby, and did this to their suite where they jazzed it up with Newcastle slogans in their suite for people who've paid for hospitality. I don't understand why they've done this. They also had a sign that said "Cheer up, Peter Reid" at some point, and something else that Newcastle fans used to sing at Sunderland when they played them regularly. It's just baffling to me. I can't get my head around why a football club would do it. By all means, if you're worried about vandalism, take your colours down.
Yeah,
but don't put your rivals up. No. That is baffling, isn't it?
It's a mental decision.
It's maybe the stupidest thing I've heard a football club do ever.
That's got through a series of meetings and conversations, and then someone's picked up the stuff in the printers, and it's got a lot of people have signed that off and gone, yeah, that makes sense, and then it's hit social media, and only then have they gone, this maybe not a good idea. Have we had better ideas than this one? I think we might have done.
They took it back down.
I don't think it got to the Newcastle fans, did it?
No, it was down by the time
Newcastle did port a thing they win, saying we've been made to feel right at home here. Thank you.
I bet they did.
Did you see Jason Tindall? He could have been a Bell End candidate. Made them get another picture on the pitch at Stadium of Light, actually, at Sunderland. Absolutely won. You do dressing room photos all the time. Made him do it on the pitch.
And shout out as well to Joey Barton, who
is a Bell End.
Is the Bell End of the year.
That's just a given, though.
But like the Fred and Rose West stuff, man. I mean, it's just...
I don't know what that is. Sorry, I've...
Do you know who they are?
Now. Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
Do you not know what he did?
No.
Oh, mate.
It was the Everton game, was it?
Everton Palace, yes.
Yeah, who were the two?
Lucy Ward and Eddie Luca, want to say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He likened them to the serial killers, Fred and Rose West. For having women on the telly talking about the football.
How has he managed to link the two?
He said it's that bad, essentially, is his point. It's that bad having those two, is essentially having two serial killers. But his latest, well, one of his latest, is he going to have a sex change? Is he going to change his gender to play in the Women's Super League?
Yeah. This is what surprised that he didn't go with Billy Barton, to be honest, because I thought he was a shoo-in for the win this week, and no one picked him. I think everybody was just waiting for somebody else to pick Joey Barton, and nobody's picked Joey Barton.
It's Chloe's normally, isn't it?
I feel like we've done the world a disservice with not picking Joey Barton for Bell End of the Week.
Thanks to Chris, Chloe, and Dan for that.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Let's move on to Journo Insight. Neil Jones joined me as ever on Tuesday morning, and we had a chat about Jordan Henderson. Yes, I know he doesn't play for Liverpool anymore, I understand it, but he is an ex-Liverpool captain. He's still got massive, massive links to the club, and obviously there's been talks about him in Saudi Arabia and potentially wanting to leave. So yeah, check out me and Neil on Jordan Henderson. I want to speak about Jordan Henderson, not technically a Liverpool player anymore, we know, obviously, and that's kind of what this conversation is about. It wasn't that long ago when we were speaking in the summer, Neil, about Henderson to Saudi Arabia, we laughed it off thinking it's nonsense, and then all of a sudden it happens.
Yeah.
And I do remember you saying a couple of times, like, you know, I'm not sure, I wonder how long he'll last, and I wonder if he'll come to regret it. By all accounts, a report from Matt Hughes, I think either first for the Daily Mail, I'm right in saying, then later collaborated by a few other people, says Jordan wants a return already. There are massive financial implications if he does that. By the way, he's going to lose a lot of wage, and he's going to be taxed an awful lot of money, which is obviously interesting. I can't say I feel sorry. I'm not sure what the right word is, but like, it's not. This doesn't come as a huge surprise. You literally touted that this could be was in play when it happened at the first time, but it does feel like it's been a really, really rocky 8 to 10 months for Jordan Henderson, really, and where a lot of things have gone sideways, and a lot of it's been by his own making as well. What are your thoughts that he wants to, seemingly wants to return ASAP from Saudi?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, the word you were looking for was maybe sadness. There's just a sadness to it, you know?
Yeah, it's a shame, yeah.
Yeah, a shame, yeah. It's, I mean, you're right, I wouldn't say I predicted it, but it doesn't surprise me that we're in this position. And he's not the only one, is he? There's a few, you know, I think there's reports about Sadio Mane not particularly being happy. I think Firmino's had it as well. I wonder what it says about the whole project a little bit with Saudi Arabia, where, you know, all the glitters kind of come to mind that, yeah, that there are things that they can give you that no one else can, you know, of course, but there are things that they just can't give you no matter what. And I mean I remember it was put to me, and I won't name, you know, who it was obviously, or even what capacity they were in. But I remember being said to me that they were, so it was jokey, but it was like, I can only imagine how fuming he would be, Jordan Henderson, with things like the training kit, with things like, because they know what he was like at Liverpool in terms of, you know, everything had to be spot on. He said, I just can't imagine him swallowing, you know, sort of second rate stuff over there. And really the second rate stuff over there relates to the football, doesn't it? You know, and the the whole thing around it, the crowds, the pitches, the kind of the experience of playing football over there, it's not the same. And you know, I don't think anyone, well, maybe not anyone, but I don't think a lot of people have a lot of sympathy for him. I don't. I think, you know, he would never seek our advice, but I think we could have told him that it's going to be hot and humid over there and the crowds aren't going to be the same as playing at Anfield. I did wonder this the other week when Firmino and Fabinho came to Anfield and watched that Newcastle game, whether they thought, I would have enjoyed that, you know, looking at that over there. But from his point of view, it leaves me in an even more difficult position now, because one, like you say, he's going to have to swallow a financial loss, a reputational loss, a loss of face. Okay, he can deal with that. Where's he going to end up? It isn't going to be Liverpool. It isn't going to be in the Champions League, I wouldn't have thought. It isn't going to be even, you know, one of the top 7 or 8 clubs in the country. That was what he couldn't swallow, wasn't it, when he was leaving. It was like, I want to be playing every week for one of the best clubs in the country. You're going to come back and go to Luton or Crystal Palace or Fulham or wherever it is. And it was also put to me recently this week, speaking to people, was, are the Saudi Arabians going to want to take that loss of faith? You know, whatever your thoughts on his politics and his hypocrisy and all those kind of things, it's a big win for them to get someone like him. You know, he was the sort of, I wouldn't say he was the unobtainable, but he was one of the ones that you say, like, you're breaking down a barrier if you get him. You know, like, look at that, we can get anyone. Are they going to want to just let him go and say, oh, sorry, didn't you like it? Go back. Does that undermine their kind of, you know, drive of recruitment, doesn't
it's
it?
It's almost like we always wondered, Cristiano Ronaldo was the one who facilitated everyone going. The first one to leave, there might be more to follow. So why the Saudis allow that? He's under contract.
And we did also say that Jordan, for another generation of younger players, does Jordan go into Saudi Arabia? Does that make it, legitimise it when you're a 21-year-old and you go, do you know what? So what? Like, I'm going to go and earn my career's money in a year. Actually, if he goes and then comes back, then it has the opposite effect of that, doesn't it? Where any player, whether they're 21 or 31, thinks, poof, tell you what, you know, Jordan's a, you know, I like him, or, you know, he's a sort of a proper professional and he's gone over there and couldn't deal with it. Puts me off. I don't know what the sort of sympathy element would be like among the Liverpool supporters. I think it would obviously be mixed, you know, and it would be unfair for me to generalise around what people think. But I think what I can safely generalise is I don't think many people would be that surprised by this emerging, and I don't think many people, I think a lot of people would have been able to predict it at the time. I'm not at all claiming that I was ahead of the curve in terms of, oh, we might struggle there. It was put to me, like I say, that there'd be a lot of things that he just wouldn't like about playing in a league like that, a development league. Jordan Henderson is someone who their whole career really has been about trying to give the highest possible standards and maintaining the highest possible levels. Yeah, he's skewed that for 6 months.
Yeah, I don't want to, listen, twist the knife or anything like that, because that's not the intention. But like, he did say, one of the reasons he went there as well, he was insistent it wasn't all financial, which I don't think many people would buy into, ironically. But he did say like he didn't really fancy playing against Liverpool. Like, another reason potentially why he would go there. Well, if he's after a Premier League return, that's almost gone out the window as well. It's almost another thing where people are, you know, you mentioned the way the blockers before, and again, it comes in different shapes and sizes, and who are we to judge someone on their career choices per se? But it's just another one of those. It's like I said, it's always sad because we want to encourage these guys to talk. We want them to talk open, honestly, and let us hear what they've got to say. But yeah, it feels like everything he said is almost coming back to bite them on the backside a little bit now, because that could be another one where people go, I remember the interview that people described as a car crash. I think it was in The Athletic. It was Adam Crafton's interview, right?
You were the one seeing Adam Crafton.
And then since then, he's got a lot of stick, and if he comes back, I can tell you now, the day he signs, if he did sign with the Premier League club, there's going to be someone's going to clip out the interview and saying, or whatever, you know, didn't want to play against Liverpool anymore, and all of a sudden he's rocking up at Anfield with X team. I don't know, it all feels, like I said, sadness and just it's the way it's gone isn't great. I don't know, it's just the way to exit a football club when it feels like this is one of the worst we've seen for a long time, really.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not sure, it is easy for us to say, well, he should have just said, I went for the money. But if he'd have done that, he would have got... There would have been a lot of... There would have been a lot of stick. So there's no right answer, but I think he's come closer to finding the wrong answer than most had. And I do think a little bit, just think... I don't want to say poorly advised, because I think he's his own man. He's 33. He's, you know, captain of Liverpool for years. You know, he should be able to make his own decisions. But I just think he's a good case study in kind of how, you know, the optics really, and how to not manage them particularly well.
There'll be PR cases at agencies across the globe of how not to do things, and Jordan Henderson's name's going to be right near the top of the
board. And you know, that interview that he gave with The Athletic, there was a lot of stuff in there that just, it almost felt naive. Well, the way he was speaking, it felt like, Jordan, you're smart, you know, you're smarter than that. You must know how that sounds, or that, you know, that won't wash. There's no reason why he should feel bad about playing against Liverpool, by the way, in the sense of, you know, he gave enough service, and whatever the aftermath of his leaving, no one can argue with what he did for Liverpool as a player. You know, and the fact that he never ever gave anything but everything that he had. So there's no reason why he should feel bad if he was to come back with Fulham. Yep. That he feels like he's been trained. Adam Lallana's been back. You know, listen, I've seen players who did nothing for Liverpool come back and get hero worshipped. You know, I remember Jonjo Shelvey scoring a goal at Anfield and spending the next 2 minutes apologising for it and being clapped and thinking, well, you're being horrendous. You're only Jonjo Shelvey. So there's no reason why you should feel like that. But when you've said it as a justification for leaving, then it's going to get thrown back at him at some point. But I'm interested to see what happens, because, like I say, I think it would be a big step from the Saudis to say, okay, you know, you've had your go. I mean, maybe they might feel like job done.
Can I focus on that? Yeah, that might be more.
Liverpool coming back to Liverpool?
No, that's not going to happen.
No.
Ticks. You talk about keeping the Saudis happy and potentially an even more controversial move as Newcastle.
I know what you're going to say.
And Luke Edwards on the BBC, he does his transfer podcast on BBC, and he reported that, you know, it's been discussed that Newcastle, obviously, they're in desperate need of midfield as a loan move. Now, you talk about burning bridges with an old club. If we can stomach, I mean, Sunderland will not. That's a mad one. But like, I'm just thinking logically. It's Saudi Arabia, the Newcastle link. That already saved face. He was talking, wasn't he, about the ban didn't get, you know, when they voted.
Yeah, Ruben Neves was over, wasn't it? We're looking in the wrong direction.
Yeah, if he wants to go full WWE villain. Rocking up at Newcastle is like, it's almost like, well, I'm the bad guy now, I'll own it kind of thing. But
the only way it would have been better is if he'd have done it last week, so he could play on the weekend and make his debut. That would be adding fuel to the fire, definitely. I mean, look, I don't think anything would shock me.
It's mad,
really. I think I'd be less shocked about that than him coming back to Liverpool, for example. But it's just
he's in a corner, and
he's in a corner. Yeah, and you know, in amongst all this, we should probably be fair enough to point out that it's not just him, is it? You know, that's in this position, as in his family. You know, he has got family considerations, and you know, there are a lot of things that I think there'll be a few people who'll be pointing and laughing and saying, "Well, you know, sorry, gutted for you," but at the same time, like, there are a lot of things that he needs to consider, but I can't believe that they weren't considered more in the summer, really, because we would have discussed all of these things. Oh, he's gonna hate playing in a team, you know. Also, I think also the fact that, like, it was like he wasn't, you know, when a lot of money's paid for a Benzema and a Ronaldo and a Neymar, you're like, yeah, I understand that, you know, like you sort of pay over the odds for those players because they're sort of game-changing signings, aren't they? The whole thing about Jordan Henderson was that he played in good teams, and he sort of he found roles within teams, and he lifted, you know, collectively. So he was always going to find it hard, wasn't he, to be the, you know, he's not stardust in terms of, you know, give me the ball and I'll just make everything happen. He needed a structure around him, really, to be a top player, which he was. So these things are, I don't know, all these things that he doesn't like about it, they were so predictable for me anyway. You know, they were so obviously that he was going to struggle to, you know, he was never going to go over there and be, my God, the best player in the Saudi League is Jordan Henderson. You know, wow, what an individual player. It was never going to be that. You know, he was always going to struggle for maybe acceptance, you know, or appreciate. He struggled for it in the Premier League, even though he was lifting the Premier
struggled
League.
Struggled for Liverpool.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even in his peak years, when he was winning everything, there were still people who, I think if everyone was fit, would have said, does Jordan Henderson get in Liverpool's team? I think he always did, but... yeah, these are just predictable problems, and I wonder the impact it has, if even if he doesn't leave, what impact it has on the next wave of people who are considering going to Saudi Arabia, where they think, okay, that might be an extra factor. You know, if you were trying to convince someone not to go, Jordan Henderson, I think, would be one of the players that you'd go. Just have a look at what's happened to him.
I was about to say, if we move the conversation on, so Jordan obviously wants to return, there's other players as well. You're talking about the next wave.
Salah.
Mo Salah. You're preempting my question there a little bit, but yeah, that, he obviously, the massive bid in the summer rejected. Everyone was just half convinced. So that'll be Salah next summer gone. If you're Mohamed Salah now, I'm guessing you'd have a word with Jordan at some point to get on the phone and go, what is it? Like empty stadiums and blah, blah. You know, Salah would be better paid, of course. It's worth mentioning and whatever. And,
yeah, he is one of those star players that, like, you know, he could do no wrong when he went over there, really. I would imagine, you know, he would only have to step on the pitch and he would feel the love of the fans. I don't think Jordan Henderson would feel that. But yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the arguments we've used. Why would Salah go there, isn't it? Or, you know, why he wouldn't, is that the competitive element of the player, that, like, you know, he wants to win everything. He wants to be the record goal scorer of everything. He wants to win Golden Boots, AFCON, all these things, Ballon d'Ors. He wants to compete with those. And you're not going to do it in the Saudi Pro League, are you? And that would again, I think Henderson would just be another sort of bullet point on that, of like, and also don't forget your old captain, that, you know, he went there because he felt like, you know, his career was winding down or whatever it was, and he soon found out that it wasn't, like I say, all the glitters wasn't gold.
Absolutely, yeah. Worth keeping an eye on.
It was interesting. I thought it was interesting. You know, Klopp asked about it, wasn't he, on Sunday, and he played it well, didn't he? Because Klopp often says this thing of, like, I've got nothing to say about that, and then he goes on for 2 minutes and you think, you've said a fair bit there, Jürgen. But there will be an expectation, or I think a hope, from some Liverpool fans that Jürgen sort of goes, well, you know,
tough luck,
boo-hoo. But I don't think he would. I think you can tell there's still that. I mean, even he called him Hendo, didn't he? There was even that kind of respect of, I think there'll be a sadness among a few people at Liverpool that, like, he didn't listen, or that he jumped too quickly, or he jumped to the wrong place. I think there'll still be a sort of an appreciation for Liverpool that it's sad that it's turned out this way for, you know, one of our great captains.
Thanks, Neil, as ever. Let's move on then. It's the final word show. Yes, Liverpool 2, Fulham 1, League Cup semi-final, first leg. A rather tight affair, a game of differing outcomes for certain players. Some players played well, some didn't. Joining me were Jamie Camford and Lewis Aspinall, and we had a chat about Darwin Núñez, and is he being disrespected by the general footballing public? Check out what Jamie and Lewis thought about Liverpool's number 9.
Just a little thing about Núñez. I know you were talking to Neil Jones, or it was either you or Dan, or are Liverpool getting, like, not disrespected, but, like, people aren't talking about us. I was just saying something the other day, and, like, Núñez is, like, in sort of national football podcasts, a bit of a punchline, like, oh, and then Núñez gets, like, I just think, like, I'm not asked about disrespect, whatever, you can think whatever you like, but I think if you can't see, he does do stuff that winds you up sometimes, but if you can't see how dangerous he is on that left, or wherever he played, I think he was unlucky with the shot. You know, I don't think he can do much with that left-footed shot. he's so dangerous. He causes murder every time he comes on. He's, especially if you're retiring defence, like, he's the last thing you want to see, isn't he? It's just, you know,
so isn't going in for him.
More power, yeah, more power to him, because he keeps going. He gallops. He is like a racehorse down that left hand side. He proper gallops. He cuts inside. Some of his crossing wasn't that great, but, you know,
positionally he's brilliant as well. Like, you know, that Newcastle game, yeah, he didn't score, but he put himself in the right spots to score.
Yeah,
I suppose. Well, it was like, I'm in a couple of group chats with fans of other teams, and he has a bit of a point. It's like, well, he hasn't scored for ages. He scored one. I was like, no, you're absolutely right. But then he has had a little bit of hard lines, and at some point you have to start scoring. Don't get that wrong. But, like, you know, he comes on against Newcastle and has a good effort, and it's just a good save by Dubravka, and then Cody Gakpo scuffs one off his studs and goes in, and then, you know, yes, he does nothing wrong, and Ben Leno just makes a good save with his legs. Like, it does feel like he's. You know, if you're talking about, like, reverting to the mean, at some point he's due to go on one of these, and he might go on it, but it does feel like I agree with Jamie, because I think you can say almost disrespected, and I think there's some Liverpool fans, I think there are times he's frustrating, and don't get me wrong, he absolutely is, but, like, to call him, like, a flop and put him in the same category as some of the other bad signings that other teams have made in the last couple of years, I think it's wrong, because the stats speak for themselves. He is providing a lot of goals. His assist numbers are decent. He has scored plenty of goals already. It does feel like he has become a bit of a punchline, because, yeah, he has missed a couple of easy chances. He's missed a few sitters, and yeah, we can't deny that. But I don't know, this idea that Darwin Nunez is absolutely shit and, like, Liverpool will be better off selling him, and I don't know, I can't get my head around that. I think we can all agree we want to see more goals. I think we'd all say so, but, like, he's contributing to a Liverpool team, and he is definitely contributing. He is not, the last thing you can say about Darwin is, like, he's anonymous. He's always involved. Yeah. He's always in the right place. So, do you feel he's being disrespected a little bit?
Yeah. I feel like I could talk about Nunez for a year. Like, the reason Nunez comes under such criticism is because we bought him at a point when we didn't necessarily need that type of player. And because of the money we spent on him, that's naturally going to come into the conversation. We've seen it with, like, Jack Grealish at City, Declan Rice at Arsenal. Caicedo. Nunez is our thing about the front line is Salah will score plenty of goals, but everyone contributes in different way. They might not all break the bank scoring 20 odd goals each in the league, but they get goals and assists, and Nunez is our top assister, and he's got 7 goals or something like that. His role in this team is not to be the out and out striker. He's to play the system, and the system requires him to just go on the wing, cut inside if he wants to, shoot from whatever angle he wants, do whatever he wants, and just put the fear of God in the back line. Yeah, he does miss easy opportunities. I've seen Salah miss one-on-ones. I saw Suarez miss one-on-ones. I've seen Torres do it. Everyone does
it. Mane used to miss sitters all the time.
Yeah, every player has missed sitters. Yeah,
he hasn't got the goals to outweigh the sitters.
And that's fair enough, but he's... What he offers to that team, and maybe it is just a case of we want it to succeed, so we're looking a bit more in-depth to it than any from other fans are, but he provides... And we've said it a million times, chaos. But that's what we are as a team up front. We want to confuse teams. We want to tire teams out. And there's no player better in that front line at doing that than Darwin. He's not the most technically gifted player, but positionally and in terms of teamwork and actually providing for the whole squad, he offers more than arguably anyone in that front line other than Salah. So he is disrespected in that sense.
I said before, like, earlier on the show, like, you know, Liverpool without their creative influences, Darwin is actually up there with them. He's got 10 assists now, 10 assists, and, you know, we'll go back to go forwards, but, like, in this particular instance, for Gakpo's second goal, it is all Darwin, and that's what kind of what he can do, Jay. It just feels like there's the narrative around him has shifted towards, like, you know, you spend that amount of money, and the fact that he wears the number 9 on his back as well, you're expecting something. Maybe it's just a little bit different than that, what it is, and that, yeah, we would like a more refined robot type finisher, maybe a more physically gifted Jota, maybe something like that's what people were after. But I think it is disrespectful to say about Darwin that he's a net negative to Liverpool. I think Liverpool, even just the eye test, Liverpool always look better when he's on the pitch, in terms of, they look like they're going to score more goals. He might not, and he is going to get more chances. He creates more chances. He gets assists. Yeah, he hasn't scored enough. But I think if you ask most Liverpool fans, or, you know, a lot of us in particular, he probably has to be in the front three in terms of just for what he offers. And that, it does feel a little bit like he's getting hard graft. I saw Josh Williams tweet saying, you know, if you're only judging him on his finishing, or you're only judging Nunes on his finishing, you're wrong, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got a lot of stick, Josh, saying, you know, ah, well, he has to score goals. And yes, he does. But you can't just ignore everything else he does as well. I think it's fair to say, like, Liverpool are wanting more goals, but they're also, Jürgen's relatively happy with what he's getting from him.
It's been a real sea change from the last half of last season. He couldn't get his way into the side. I think I remember doing a show late last season. We were talking about who do you think is going to be his preferred, and I mentioned Nunez because I was thinking, well, the money they've paid, it's not loose change. And it's like, no, he's behind probably Jota and Gakpo in the pecking order for that central slot. I'm thinking, like, I couldn't argue at the time, but he's managed to now. People are half time shouting for him to come on. We do look so much more dangerous with him in the team. I think everyone's going to have a breaking point with him because I don't think he's going to change. There was a game the other day where I can't even remember which one it was, but I'm like, what's the point in having like the world's best car in your driveway if it keeps breaking down? I'd rather have a worse car than guess me where. Or I don't know if that's the right analogy, but like, the thing you're supposed to do is score goals, like, and you can't look past that. And I don't think that was his issue last night. He'll probably miss a sitter in the Champions League semi final next. You know, like, he'll do something the way you're like, oh my god, but he is still worth his place in the team. I don't know if that clinical thing that Jota has in front of goal can ever be coached into him, because we've all seen the mad finish. He scored some amazing goals for Uruguay as well. I don't know. He's box office, isn't he? I just want to keep seeing him in the team. I want to keep seeing him harassing defenders, and through, like, as you were saying about sharing the contributions out through across all five. We are going to beat teams. I don't care if it's Diaz who scores, or Salah's going to get the bulk of them. As long as through the five of them, we are winning games, yeah, then that's great. You know,
the second goal yesterday, Lewis, we'll talk about it now. Like, he does so well.
Yeah.
And it's almost like proper old-fashioned wing play. Get to the byline, pull it back. Yeah. But the pullback's clever. It's not just hitting hope. He picks Cody Gakpo out, who finishes delightful as well. But the thing with Darwin, actually, that I've noticed more when he plays on the left wing is when you think of Darwin and his pace, you're always thinking ball in behind, running the channels. The Newcastle goals, for example, he's actually really good with the ball at his feet in those positions. Sometimes he looks like he doesn't know what he's doing. And again, it's worth mentioning. But when he gets on those little short bursts and starts twisting and turning, you know, I thought Castagne had a decent game overall, but he did cause him, you know, he caused him way more problems than Luis Diaz did when he was out on the left hand side. So fair play. Like, that is like, you know, I don't know, like, shifting him out to the wingers, maybe found something, because like, that's not exactly what you wanted to do, but it kind of feels like maybe it is as well.
Well, some players just adapt to a different position better than they do. Like you mentioned, Oxlade, he started off as a winger and we made him a midfielder and he looked way better.
Gini Wijnaldum.
So many players do it. And like, if you look at that goal, Nunez looks where Gakpo is in the box before he gets to the byline. When he hits it, he's not even looking. He just knows where he's going to be. So he knows the system well, and he's superb at doing what he's doing. And I've said like a billion times, in the centre, because of the expectation, you're there to score goals. But on the wings, he can just do whatever. And that assist yesterday is what he's good at. Like you said, he's got frightening pace, and he's one of the most physical players in the league. He bullies defenders. So having him out there to do just that benefits anyone in the middle massively, and Gakpo recently has been a beneficiary of it. That assist yesterday just showed us football and IQ. And a lot of people will say, you know, he lacks technicality, and you know, his football, he doesn't know what to do. He does, because he keeps showing time and time again that he'll miss the easy chances, but in terms of setting up players in the centre positions or scoring outrageous goals that he shouldn't be able to, he's quality at it. And like I said before, he's going to miss easy chances. He's going to miss ones that are stresses out. But if he's going to do stuff like that or score the goals that he does, I don't give a shit. He can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Double digit assists off the season. He gets Curtis as assist as well. You'll take that every time. You'll pay some respect to Darwin Nunez, fellow football fans, if anyone's watching this one.
Cheers to Jay and to Lewis for coming in for that one. And finally, expert insight. Yes, the January transfer window is currently open. We haven't heard too much activity from Liverpool other than the odd recall of loans and loaning players out. But yeah, Dan brought in Lewis Steele, who covers the Reds for the Daily Mail, to have a chat about Liverpool's January plans, what could and couldn't happen. Here's a short clip from this week's expert insight.
More interestingly, I guess, for everybody watching and indeed listening, centre-halves. Now, we said right at the top of this little segment, Joel Matip out for the remainder of the season. Don't know what that means in terms of the future for him, but we'll park that for a moment. That leaves us with Virgil van Dijk, the outstanding Joel Quantu, who's really come to the fore this season. Ibrahim Konate, who is incredible, but has his own fitness concerns, I think it's fair to say. And Joe Gomez, who, for all his brilliance in terms of his versatility, has fitness problems and also can't be in three different positions at once. So everyone is looking at this situation and going, will Liverpool act on it? Now, I think the place to start with this, Lewis, you've mentioned four potential centre-backs in your piece for the Daily Mail. Antonio Silva, Gonçalo Inácio is the name that won't go away. Ousmane Diamande is another one. All three, obviously, based in Portugal. And the place to start, really, is Liverpool feel as though the centre-back problem or the centre-back position is the next place we're going to go. We did the midfield last summer. The centre-back feels like the next one. Is that right?
Yeah, that seems to have been... That's what all the noise seems to suggest. I do think it's still very unlikely something happens in January. The only thing that would change that is if Konate or, well, any of the three got injured, really. And I think they're still at the very early stages of planning in that department. I mean, they're... Like, I always find it surprising how much fans get sort of overexcited when you say a club's scouting a player, because these clubs are genuinely scouting like hundreds of players a season, and that's when they'll rattle it down, and they'll have scouts all over Europe, all over South America as well, watching these players. But there are a few names that keep getting mentioned with people you talk to around football and whatever, people in the know. The Inácio one seems to be the one most mentioned. I don't think that necessarily means he's the most likely to sign, because this is very much early stages of the planning. And there'll probably be a name that none of us have even heard yet that'll come to the fore. And you don't know. I think another one that has been mentioned, but this might be more just because he's ready to step up, is the lad at Palace, Gueye Gouye. Mm-hmm. He's one of them where I think his agents are sort of thinking, you know, like, he's playing for England, he's probably Palace's best player, or one of their best defensive players at least, and, you know, he's probably ready to step up to a bigger club. Not necessarily means that'll be Liverpool, but, you know, I'm sure they'll keep tabs on him. He plays on that left side as well, which is quite interesting. And I think Inácio as well, he's left-footed. And when you look at the system, I think they might look for a sort of left-footed defender, because with Trent wandering into midfield, you've sometimes seen Robbo have to tuck in a bit into like a almost like a back three when they're in possession. So that would be really beneficial if they got a sort of left-footed one that could come out to them wider areas, almost play as a bit of a wide centre-back. Mm-hmm. You see Gvardiol play that sort of role for City. But they're obviously watching a lot of players. Portugal seems to keep being mentioned. I don't know whether that's just because I know a few people in Portugal or whatnot, but there's a lad at Bayer Leverkusen as well. There's absolutely no chance they're going to sell one of their players in January, though, because they're obviously going for the Bundesliga title and they're still in the Europa as well. So, yeah, it's very early stages in that. They're obviously still drawing up that list of the long list of candidates, and they'll go from there and keep watching them for the rest of the season and see what business makes sense in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is, of course, the way to go about it. But I think it's interesting how, obviously, you mentioned the Portuguese thing there. Liverpool have targeted Portugal relatively successfully as well in recent years. And it does seem to be a sort of a breeding ground that Liverpool like, because they've had some joy from it, as I say. And it's interesting, obviously, January can be a bit of a volatile market, and it seems to be a bit of a domino effect. You mentioned if a player was to get injured, Liverpool might need to act, therefore, and obviously having names on a list at least somewhere will be useful in that circumstance. But do you think there's any chance we've seen in the past, I think it was Cody Gakpo, the Man United interest spark Liverpool into life there, Tottenham and Luis Diaz. Do you think there's any chance that could be the case in this window as well? Because let's just say, for argument's sake, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Man City, one of the above, suddenly take a liking to Gonzalo and Asher and make their move. Do you think Liverpool would be inclined to do something similar?
Yeah, they wouldn't rule it out, definitely. I don't know what their FFP calculations are looking like, because obviously they'd spend a lot of money in the summer. But we saw it with Cody Gakpo last summer and Diaz the year before, that they weren't signings that they... I don't think they planned to do them in January. It was more just that they brought them forward from the summer, was the word. Mm-hmm. So that could happen. I mean, there's a lot of ifs, buts and maybes involved in that, if that was the case. But I'm sure they've got a long list of centre-backs. There'll be plenty who we've not mentioned. There'll be plenty who probably we've never heard of that are on the list. There's a case that where if a Van Dijk got injured, they might have to do a sort of short-term, cheaper deal. And there is a few centre-backs in the Prem who have got contracts running up in the summer who they could get on a cheap. I know the lad at Bournemouth, Lloyd Kelly,
yeah,
is one who's been mentioned before. I don't think Liverpool think he's quite good enough for them. I think he's more of like... I'm sure he's a good player. I think he's captained Bournemouth a few times, but... is he good enough for Liverpool? I'm not really sure. I've not watched him enough to answer that. But yeah, I mean, they could bring one forward, but I'd say it's very unlikely at this stage, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. It absolutely is. And yeah, Lloyd Kelly one is one who we linked with him before he made the move to Bournemouth back in his Bristol City days. So it's not a huge surprise to see his name still doing around. Certainly not when you consider what you mentioned a moment ago in terms of him being a left footer, can play a little bit of left back, then slot into what becomes a three. I think it does make sense for Liverpool to be looking at this market. And as I mentioned earlier, it does feel like potentially the next big transfer Liverpool do in terms of incomings will be in the centre-half department. That's certainly the taste I get. In terms of the names, obviously none of them sort of a standout candidate right now, but Antonio Silva, Diamande, release clauses on both of them. I think Diamande is around the 60, 70 million mark. I think Liverpool are going to have to fork out big at some point, you would imagine.
Yeah, well, to be fair, 70 million is the new 30 million. And I mean, like, you're not going to get a really good centre half for less than 50 million, really, these days, are you? So, yeah, they're going to have to spend big if they want to do it. But they're willing to spend big. They obviously spent reasonable money on Szoboszlai. They got McAllister on quite a, well, very cheap deal, really, from Brighton, I thought, considering he'd won a World Cup and was one of Brighton's best players when they got to Europe. So they've definitely got the money to spend. Like they're not going to, you know, pull out of any deals because they asked for 70 million or whatever. But I think the fact that their centre back sort of shortages are well documented will work against them, because, you know, if you're a Sporting Lisbon director of football or whatever, you'll think, you know, we can easily get another 20 million out of these. But it's interesting. I think they obviously... They're planning for a centre-back before Joel Matip got injured, of course, because he's obviously in his mid-30s now. Early 30s still, I suppose. But he's not getting any younger. He's not getting any quicker. But I think they've been really surprised by just how much Jarrell Quantz has come on this season. I know I have for certain, because, you know, he's on loan at Bristol Rovers last season. I remember I spoke to some guy who watches them every week earlier in the season, and he was saying, you know, he was good, but he wasn't like, we never saw this coming. And I think Liverpool have sort of felt the same about him. So that I've written before, Jarrell Quantz could be the man that saves Liverpool £100 million, because they're not going to have to go out there and buy someone, because he can genuinely step up. And I've not seen him put a foot wrong all season. But I think they do need, regardless of that, they do need another centre-half, because you just think, Canate has been brilliant in the last month, but do you trust him to stay fit all season? I'm not sure I do. I mean, he seems to have got over them injuries that kept coming up, but you never know, do you, with all the games that happen in football these days?
No, absolutely, mate. Yeah, and I think you're right. Ultimately, Jarrell Quantz is absolutely right now. He's nigh on nailed on to a future as part of Liverpool's first team plans. But you're right. I think the Joel Matip outgoing situation is the one that makes us need a centre back at some point, potentially in the summer.
Thanks to Dan and thanks to Lewis. And thanks for you guys for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed that episode of Red Men Weekly. Like I said before, go and check the shows out
in full over at redmenplus.com. Use that Klopp promo code. Get it for nothing for a month. Check out if you like it. I'm sure you will. Some great content over there, as well as some timeless stuff to keep you entertained as the Reds don't have a game over the weekend. We've got our countdown of the 50 greatest Liverpool signings of all time. We've got some amazing documentaries, such as the Hendo 10 documentary, the Bobby Firmino Best in the World. There's German Scousers. There's the story of Ekru. Loads and loads. So yeah, like when you scroll Netflix to look for something to do on a quiet weekend, Red Men Plus has got you covered with loads of features and stuff to keep you entertained while the Reds enjoy a very well-earned break. Yeah, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back with another weekly next Friday. See you then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.